Production of Alaskan marine byproducts, specifically shellfish meals, is a relatively new industry in Alaska. It also represents the introduction of new products for livestock feeding. Latest research has found that the use of crab meal can be a viable energy and protein source for livestock. Did you know that? Hello, I'm Karen Sedzo, and I didn't know that. For the past 5 years, researchers at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Agricultural Experiment Station have been studying the feasibility of replacing expensive imported soybean meal with crab meal in animal diets. At the same time, the Institute of Water Resources has been researching effective separation of shellfish solid byproducts from seafood processing wastewater. Both research projects have noted the presence and potential of one of the byproducts, chitin. Chitin not only can be used in making a variety of biodegradable products such as plastic fittings, but also can be used in feedstuff for beef and dairy cattle. Research has found that the coarser remains after separation of crab waste from wastewater contain appreciable amounts of chitin. Chitin is similar to cellulose, the carbohydrate of plants that is an important energy source for ruminants, those animals having stomachs with four chambers. Studies with rumen fluid have established that 25% to 40% of the dry weight of crab meal disappeared in the forestomach, with much of the remainder being digested in the lower digestive tract. Chitin and protein in the coarse shell crab meal were found to be better digested by the animals after a period of adaptation or reduction in particle size. At the Homer Research Center, studies evaluated crab meal as a free-choice protein supplement to low-quality hay fed to calves during the winter. The calves fed crab meal along with hay consumed 25% more hay than those fed only hay. The group eating crab meal and hay gained weight, while those eating only hay actually lost weight. This study has been relocated at the Palmer Research Center, where work continues with dairy steers. Results to date suggest that meal plant operators might be able to produce fine material of higher quality for non-ruminants such as swine and still market the coarse material as a feedstuff for ruminants such as dairy and beef cattle. I'm Karen Sedzo, and I Didn't Know That was produced by the UAF Public Affairs Office in cooperation with KUAC-FM. Barley from the Delta Agricultural Project could be used to make a supplemental feeding of Alaskan reindeer economically feasible. Did you know that? Hello, I'm Karen Sedzo, and I didn't know that. Scientists with the University of Alaska Fairbanks Institute of Arctic Biology have been instrumental in assisting the reindeer industry in Alaska. Recent research determined that reindeer death losses were extremely high on the Seward Peninsula, and that several areas of the Seward Peninsula currently used for reindeer herding have limited quantities of good winter range. Heavy snow cover, fire destruction, and overgrazing all contributed to the poor condition of the range. Overwintering on marginal rangelands, these reindeer lose body weight and soon become susceptible to disease and predation. In a 1980 study, a mixed grain diet of oats, corn, and barley was fed to penned reindeer for 60 days during the late winter. These animals maintained body weights better than grazing reindeer. This latest study consisted of two phases. The first phase tested the performance of penned reindeer fed an all-barley diet over several months at Cantwell. The second phase focused on feeding whole grain barley as a supplement to free-grazing reindeer near Kotzebue. In both cases, the animals gained weight. The scientists concluded that Alaska-grown barley is a useful supplemental feed during the winter months when grazing conditions become marginal. Also, all barley diets appear to be a means of fattening reindeer prior to slaughter. Transportation costs still need to be reduced, however, to make the barley supplement cost-effective. I'm Karen Sedzo, and I Didn't Know That was produced by the UAF Public Affairs Office in cooperation with KUAC-FM. Thank you. The use of common salt and calcium chloride to de-ice winter roads has created controversy both in Alaska and across the nation. Research has identified a potential substitute for salt that might be cost-effective to use in-state. Did you know that? Hello, I'm Karen Sedzo, and I didn't know that. Sodium chloride, or common salt, and calcium chloride definitely reduce the hazard of winter driving. The controversy surrounding the use of these de-icing agents stems from the total cost assigned to their use. Pollution and corrosion damage attributed to chloride salts boost their total or real cost to nearly 15 times the cost of the salt product itself. And damage can be extensive. For example, the life expectancy of a car in Juneau is less than 6 years. The alternative being researched by faculty in the University of Alaska Fairbanks Petroleum Engineering Department is calcium magnesium acetate, or CMA. CMA not only de-ices, but does so with little damage. It is non-corrosive to most metals, even when compared to tap water. The material decomposes into three harmless components: carbon dioxide, water, and limestone. Limestone residue would actually serve as a soil conditioner for unpaved areas bordering the roadway. That's in sharp contrast to the ground poisoning effect of a chloride salt. The biggest drawback to the use of CMA right now is its cost. At present, it can only be obtained in a very costly and purified form. The Department of Transportation and Public Facilities has funded the UAF studies to determine the feasibility of manufacturing low-grade CMA in-state. Significantly, studies to date found that CMA could be economical at production levels above 17 tons per day. Larger-scale production could be possible if petroleum-derived, low-grade, low-cost acetic acid can be made available within Alaska. Eventually, Alaska could become a major producer and exporter of low-grade CMA. I'm Karen Sedzo, and I Didn't Know That was produced by the UAF Public Affairs Office in cooperation with KUAC-FM. Ice fog is not unique to Fairbanks, Alaska. It occurs in the Canadian community of Whitehorse, which, like Fairbanks, is cut off from regular airflow by surrounding hills. Not strictly an Arctic phenomenon, ice fog has been reported in Fargo, North Dakota. Did you know that? Hello, I'm Karen Sedzo, and I didn't know that. Ice fog develops at minus 23 degrees Fahrenheit and colder, when the atmosphere can no longer hold significant quantities of water. Ice fog can be relatively clean, or it can be polluted. It is the pollution that is of concern to most people. And all of Alaska knows the problem Fairbanks experiences each winter. Interestingly, air pollution is not a problem that occurs only during periods of ice fog. Research being conducted through the University of Alaska Fairbanks Geophysical Institute has determined that air pollution outbreaks occur at other times during the year, but they aren't as visible. Thousands of chemical compounds have been found in air pollution. These compounds are grouped into seven classes for legal purposes. Research has tended to focus on those compounds or classes of compounds that are easiest to monitor, those that are the most obvious or are present in excessive quantities. One of the specific compounds being monitored in Fairbanks is carbon monoxide. It's creating problems for more than Fairbanks, however. Several hundred communities across the nation experience carbon monoxide pollution. The oxides of nitrogen make up one of the legal classes occasionally investigated. Under low light, ice fog, and low temperature conditions, nitric oxide, a highly toxic and chemically reactive compound, is formed. Virtually no medical information is available on this compound. Under normal conditions, the oxides exist in a form known as nitrogen dioxide, a compound that has been well researched. Other nitrogen compounds are also present in ice fog, although they don't have a legal basis for study. One is ammonia, a not particularly harmful compound. However, the significant quantities of organic nitrogen compounds could have serious long-term effects on our health and safety. Unfortunately, air pollution studies are very expensive, and little is being done to research the compounds not legally defined as air pollution. I'm Karen Sedzo, and I Didn't Know That was produced by the UAF Public Affairs Office in cooperation with KUAC-FM.